One of the things that's kind of brought attention back to the great work that you guys are doing over there is the New York Times story on Ryan Hoffman and the follow-ups from there. And we had the story last week of him being flown back to Chapel Hill. Is there any information that you could provide us on that?
Well, I think it was just amazing how the campus responded in terms of trying to do everything possible for Ryan. Certainly is one of our own, and we do this work here at the Center for the Study of Retired Athletes for former athletes from many universities and professional teams around the country. And so when we had an opportunity to try to help one of our own, it was, as I said, amazing that people reached out in the way that they did. And I appreciate your respecting that we can't say anything specific about his particular case. I do want to say that I'm optimistic that there will be a positive story in the end to Ryan Hoffman's story. And so I think that's about all I can say. And I'm just pleased that so many people reached out in the way that they did.
On a little broader scale, as we kind of branch out a little bit, some people had the question right after this story came out about what UNC is doing to kind of monitor some of the other athletes. And I know you work with a lot of retired athletes. So can you talk about that a little bit? What is the university doing working with other student athletes?
Sure. So our Center for the Study of Retired Athletes has been in existence since about 2001, and we have prided ourselves on a team-based approach to conducting research studies to better understand the later life challenges that former athletes, both collegiate and professional, might experience. And a lot of our work's been funded over the years through funding from NIH, from the CDC, from foundations such as the National Operating Committee for Standards and Athletic Equipment, and the NCAA, the NFL, the National Football Players Association have all funded our work. And we have an amazing team of neuroscientists, orthopedists. We partner with the Department of Neurology as well as physical medicine and rehab. And we have found over the years that former players with a history of three or more concussions are more at risk for depression later in life or mild cognitive impairment later in life. As we've brought them to campus, though, we've learned that it's not necessarily a life of hard knocks for everyone. Probably one in five of those former athletes that do come back to campus to be evaluated, we do find there's sort of this perfect storm that is aligned for them, unfortunately, and we have to try to get them back on track. But for many of them, they're doing just fine, and it's a matter of providing a baseline for them to let them know what they look like at age 30, 40, 45, to be sure that as they do age, that they're on the right track to a healthy life once they begin to enter those years where they are at risk for cognitive impairment and depression.
What started you down this path of working in this field in particular?
My education began as an athletic trainer, working with the medical staffs of high school, colleges, and then while I was at the University of Pittsburgh as a graduate student in physiology, I had an opportunity to work for the Pittsburgh Steelers as an athletic trainer and was really troubled by the way in which we just arbitrarily sent players back to play. And so when I decided to go on to the University of Virginia to do my doctoral work, I really wanted to focus my attention in that area, looking at ways that we could better identify concussion and to treat it. And so my work began around looking at measures of balance and cognitive function. And when I arrived then in Chapel Hill for my first and only academic job that I've had for 20 years now, I was fortunate to land in a place that cared an awful lot about caring for student athletes, trying to better identify ways to manage their injuries, especially concussion, which is where my focus was, obviously. And I landed in the perfect place where I had sports medicine staff that cared an awful lot about this. Dan Hooker, who was our director of sports medicine, along with Brian Smith at the time, the team physician. And since that time, Mario Sioka and Scott Oliaro, and who are leading the way now, that they care about this. And so we were able to essentially care for our athletes by building probably the first ever true baseline concussion program in the country in 1995-96 that is we've sort of tweaked along the way, and I now have colleagues such as Jason Mihalik and Jonna Mihalik that help run our center, named after Matthew Gefeller. Matthew Gefeller was a high school football player in Winston-Salem who died in 2008 of a traumatic brain injury, and his parents came to us about a year later wanting to turn tragedy into something positive. That center is focused on research that can help better identify injury, manage injury, better educate young athletes, as well as our college athletes and professional athletes, about the dangers of concussion and the dangers of not reporting those concussions. And so we've been improving through the efforts of the Gefeller family and friends, the improving safety in sport since about 2011.
As we do become more aware of the danger of concussions, what's the next hurdle? What's the next major challenge to try to understand this going forward and try to help out athletes as much as possible?
I think that the media has done a lot of good around this topic, and that they've helped create an awareness, not only across the state of North Carolina, but across the nation on this topic. But at times, it's been sensationalized to the point where the average person may think there's a concussion epidemic. And part of our work is to calm the fears in some regards, because we see a lot of parents pulling their kids out of sport, probably unnecessarily so, because they see that the concussion incidence is on the rise. The reason that it is on the rise is that there are more concussions being reported than ever before. And that's actually not a bad thing. In other words, we've closed the gap on the number of unreported concussions. So it may appear that sport is more dangerous today than it ever has been, but in actuality, I would say that it's safer than it maybe has ever been, because the word's gotten out that kids need to report their injuries, coaches need to be more careful, and when they suspect a kid sustained a concussion, to pull him or her out. And this isn't just a football injury. That's the other important point. I think concussions occur in just about every sport. We know that soccer is very popular, and we do see concussions occurring in soccer and lacrosse, and believe it or not, we've seen a few cross-country runners that have fallen, or in one case hit by a deer on the cross-country course, kind of a rare, very rare sort of mechanism, but one that I share sort of half-jokingly, I might say, but just to, you know, let people know that regardless of what sport you're playing, you can be at risk for a concussion. And in that case, the local Elks Club gave the kid an honorary membership as a result of the concussion he had sustained. But again, these are injuries that are more likely to occur in contact sports, and we should never make light of them. But we're in a much better place today because of the efforts of people like the Gefeller family and the University of North Carolina that has made this part of its mission to improve safety in sport. There is not a concussion crisis as we sit here today. It's just an injury that we know a lot more about and understand the importance of managing it properly.
Chris Borland of the San Francisco 49ers, a guy that retired after his rookie year, just saying that he was concerned going forward. Do you think that's something that you may see more of? Do you think that that's warranted in most cases?
Yes, so I've been asked about Chris's case here in the last week, 10 days, since he did retire at, I think, age 24 after just a year. And I commend him for making a decision like that. And I think it's important that we put good information about concussion and the later life challenges that some athletes have experienced to get that information in front of players today, athletes of any sport, and allow them to make an informed decision and an individual decision, I think, in this case, that needs to be made. I've been asked, do I expect this to be a trend? And I don't know the answer to that. If I had to guess, I'd say I don't expect a lot of professional athletes to line up behind him in this regard, and I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't. I just don't expect that we'll see this mass exodus of athletes in his situation at that young of an age. But I'm pleased that he made a decision that he felt was best for himself. I don't know his medical history. There may be a history of prior concussions during his high school years or college years that led him to make the decision. But I am proud of him, respect his decision. I would hope that others would as well. And I think that it'll certainly shed light on the way in which people should make these individual decisions.
I don't know if this will be an easy or a difficult question to answer, but is there anything that stands out over your decades now of service in this area that maybe you're most proud of or you're most happy whenever you look back that this individual piece of your work has either furthered discussion or made us aware of a certain thing that we weren't before?
Well, I think some of our work lately has centered around changing behavior and a culture around this topic. And I think that I'm proud of the fact that our work here in Chapel Hill, I think, has enlightened sporting organizations about how to do this the right way. I think there has been a culture shift around the topic just about at every level of play. I was very proud of the fact that some of our work here at the collegiate level, where we've placed accelerometers in the helmets of players, of our football players at Carolina and our youth hockey players, and more recently at Chapel Hill High School, where the parents and coaches have allowed us to do some work, some research by placing accelerometers in the helmets of players. And we identified that the kickoff is the most dangerous play in football based on what those accelerometers have told us. And as a result, in 2011, the NFL changed the kickoff rule as a result of some of our work. And if you recall, they moved the kickoff line up from the 30-yard line to the 35-yard line with the anticipation that we'd see more touchbacks, so fewer balls would be returned. And they also minimized the running start from a 10-yard running start to a 5-yard running start. As a result of that, we saw in the past three seasons in the NFL about a 45% reduction in the number of concussions sustained on the kickoff play. And subsequently, the NCAA changed their rule a year later, and we've seen nearly a 50% reduction in the number of concussions on the kickoff play. And so I'm proud of that. We're continuing to use the accelerometers to study behavior modification. So we're training athletes how to use that data that come from their accelerometer systems and linking it to video footage and showing them how they can tackle or block safer, using safer techniques. And I think that unlike helmets, which we know cannot prevent concussions, they can reduce the risk, but there's no concussion-proof helmet. I do think that using this advanced technology and through these sensors or accelerometers, we may be able to prevent injuries from occurring and make it a safer game.